Session 254, April 27, 1966, Early Sessions, Volume 6. Good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, now as you know, all aspects of physical reality first exist within the framework of non-objective reality. In certain areas of mass shared dreams, collective mankind deals with the problems of his political and social objective structure. The solutions which he makes within his dream reality are often, however, not the same solutions that he accepts within physical reality. The dream solutions are held as the ideals, however. Without, for example, mass dreams, your United Nations would never exist. This type of mass dream is one of several varieties. It is true indeed that all dreams to some extent are shared. For the privacy that you imagine exists within them is, as Rupert correctly supposed, an illusion. It is of course necessary at this stage of your development that selectivity be used, and that some standards be drawn that will effectively define apparent limitations and boundaries. The area within these limitations and boundaries you call the self. The self expands as your ability grows, as you learn to retain identity in the midst of diversity. Practically speaking, you see, if you were aware of the constant barrage of telepathic communications that do impinge upon you, it would be most difficult to retain identity. Identity would suffer if it were forced to perceive more impressions than it could effectively handle. Shared dreams are therefore well beneath awareness. Identity could be called a strong organizing characteristic that perceives impressions in definite ordered form. An identity is strengthened through experience, then it automatically expands itself to add further realities which it is now able to manipulate. I have told you that dream reality is more cohesive than you may have supposed. Such characteristics as shared dreams go a long way to stabilize dream reality. When you dream of others, they know it. When they dream of you, you know it. There would be nothing to be gained, however, in conscious awareness of these conditions. This is a slight aside. Many people dreamed of Jack Kennedy's death in advance, as you know. On one level, this knowledge was available to the man himself. This does not mean that the death had to happen. It was a vivid possibility. It was also one of many solutions to several problems. While it was not the most suitable solution, it was the closest man could come at that particular time in physical reality. All events are known in advance, but still there is a selectivity that is unknown. Dreams, as you know, have their own electric reality, their own psychic energy. And their effect upon physical events is extremely strong. The effect is undiluted, so to speak. The emotional intensity of a dream is very seldom recalled in its full strength. Psychic action is being directed in a way not possible in the ordinary waking condition. Shared dreams present their own historic organization, for the shared memory of your race does not only include physical events, but reaches much further than this. Dreams, you see, are also imprinted within the cells electromagnetically. We will take a simple example. Those who are not prejudiced against those races who are kept downtrodden. They dream individually and collectively of changing the situation. They act out of their dreams the various ways in which such a changeabout could occur. These dreams actually bring about the resulting change, and will then happen in a historic manner. The very energy and direction you see of the dreams themselves will help change the situation. I suggest you break. You see, in the waking state, you direct your energy in the manipulation and construction of objects. In some respects, this dissipates the energy, of course. In the dream state, you manipulate energy more directly. That is what you are doing, of course, in self-hypnosis. But used for therapy, you are also trying to affect or change something physical. In the existence of what you call the radio stars, you have energy that is being manipulated more directly than you can imagine. Energy knowing itself, highly individualized. You have self-structures so intense that they are able to handle an infinite variety of impressions, share them, use them, and still retain individual identities. You understand that the radio stars are merely the projection of something else. That is, your scientists with their instruments perceive only the appearance that these structures take when they fall within the physical system. This has nothing to do with the nature of their own reality, for you cannot perceive that in any direct manner. You cannot, for that matter, perceive yourselves directly, but only through the sense apparatus which has been adopted by the self. You perceive directly psychological experiences, but you do not perceive these in their undiluted form. You protect yourself and automatically sift out what is too vivid or intense at any given time. You do not even perceive sense data with a third of the vividness of which you are capable. This has to do again with the self-protection used. The self does not perceive any impressions you see which are so vivid that it could be overwhelmed. As the self learned then, it allows greater and more intense impressions. If you are comfortable, then we shall continue briefly. In most instances, the full and undiluted use, even of the outer senses, could sweep an insecure self into fragments. The sense and intensity of any impression cannot be stronger or more intense than the perceiver. Full and uninhibited use of even the outer senses would lead you to inner reality. Usually, only a strong and disciplined self, a well-structured identity, can perceive in this manner, and then only occasionally. Full operation of inner and outer senses, you see, in your present stage of development as a race, would be blinding, as you can see in your reading of drug experiences. An occurrence only remotely approaching this can be disastrous, not because it is basically undesirable, for such an experience has the greatest potential for development of the self. Such experiences can be disastrous simply because the self structure is not yet strong enough to assimilate and contain the intensity of the experience. In many cases, dream experiences, as I have mentioned, are much more vivid and intense than waking experience. You do not even remember the majority of these, but the inner self is more flexible, you see, than the ego. And it can, therefore, contain greater intensities without undue alarm. At this point, the Dr. InStream material was inserted, which I'm skipping. Session 255, May 2nd, 1966. Early Sessions, Volume 6. Good evening. Good evening, Seth. Seth. Now, you were earlier speaking of reincarnation, and Rupert has just finished reading The Three Faces of Eve. We shall tie these two subjects together. The book should make one point plain. Identity, despite all appearances to the contrary, does not reside primarily in the ego. Social identity may possibly there reside, but the basic identity does not. The Four Faces of Eve all represented various ego manifestations of one inner identity. The course of the ego is a precarious one, and any number of potential egos exist within any identity. The Three Faces of Eve is an excellent title for the book, since the ego may quite legitimately be compared to the face that the identity turns toward objective reality, or the living mask that it dons. The authors made several excellent points without, however, carrying the main point in any actuality. They conceive of the psychological structure as a gestalt, dominated by the ego, formed by various needs and potentialities. When the dominating ego relaxes its control for any reason or becomes weakened, then, according to their concept, any one of the subsidiary groups may take over. They do not know, however, where identity does reside, and consider it the result merely of organized perceptual patterns. Subsidiary potential egos can then seize upon and use the organism's sensual and perceiving apparatus. They do mention, the authors, that this can sometimes be the result of necessity. The next strongest takes over when the captain is down, so to speak, so that the whole can survive. But identity is much more than this, and the basic identity, while using the perceptive abilities, is not that dependent upon them. It is true that the personality is a gestalt, and that every identity has any number of potential egos. It is also true that, on occasion, one potential ego will take over from another. But this is all highly simplified, for the ego structure is not one thing, but a changing, never constant, actually quite informal grouping of psychological patterns. Each ego uses and interprets the organism's perceiving apparatus in a way that in the overall is characteristic and distinctive. This characteristic way of interpreting perceived data and of reacting to it is not as constant as it appears to be, however. The stability and illusion of permanence is highly misleading. The four manifestations of personality all belonged to one identity, and this is perhaps the main point missed. For if the authors say that oftentimes a subordinate or potential ego will take over control, when necessary in order to ensure the survival of the whole, then this implies a decision that has been made, and who has made it? The authors ignore this question. The decision has been made on the part of the basic identity. It is not dependent upon any particular ego structure, but it is dependent upon an ego structure for its existence within a physical universe. It can therefore, without loss of its basic integrity, change egos when such a change becomes necessary. Now, in some cases, this may cause inconvenience and considerable psychological difficulties, but when such an instance occurs, it is because the ego structure that is being disposed was not carrying out the main aims or goals of the identity which originally gave it that envied position of dominance. You may take your break. While identity and consciousness are regarded as the result of primary physical processes, then the nature of personality will never be understood. The inner self is always in the process of trying to perfect the nature of that ego which it has adopted. The ego, as you know, is never the same. It bears indeed the stresses that result from daily encounters with physical situations, but it also reaps the rewards that are involved. The inner self chooses from its available potential personalities the one that it finds most adequate. Sometimes it simply makes an error, for the inner self is not a perfect thing, any more than an ego is. But identity does exist, and the ego is but a pseudo-identity formed for utilitarian reasons. And as such, it is of course a part of the basic identity from which it springs. It has its own possibilities of development and achievement. This should not be forgotten, and all potential egos have also their own possibilities. The inner self or identity must express itself through its ego in order to manipulate within physical reality. The inner self is composed of all the potential egos that compose it, but it is more than the sum of these. Now, these potential egos, you see, made up the various potentials and needs and abilities. These pooled resources that belonged to the inner reality did not simply spring into existence. They are the result of psychological experience gained in past lives. The personality structure does not make sense unless such past experience is taken into consideration. Potentials do not simply appear, they evolve. I have told you that the most minute portion of energy possesses consciousness and has its own identity. This identity of itself is never annihilated. It may form into new gestalts, but the identity is retained. The energy that composes personality, therefore, consists of an inconceivable number of separate identities. These separate identities form what we call the inner self, which retain its individuality even while the energy that composes it constantly changes. There are continual groupings and regroupings, but basic identities are always retained. The potential egos within any given identity, therefore, retain their own individuality and self-knowledge, regardless of their relative importance in the order of command. These potential egos at one time or another will have their chance, as dominant egos, in this existence or in another reincarnation. They represent the overall potentials of the whole identity in respect to physical existence. The identity has, in other words, latent abilities, which it will not use within the physical system, but all of the latent ability ever available lies within the original identity. Narrator notes. At this point, the section concluded with the Dr. Enstream experimental material, which I'm skipping. Session 256, May 4, 1966, Early Sessions, Volume 6. Seth. Good evening. Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth. We shall continue the discussion begin in our last session. The overall efficiency of the inner self, or prime identity, is best displayed, of course, when it adopts an ego that mirrors its own characteristics and intents as closely as possible. There is bound to be a difference, however, between the purposes of the inner identity and the ego. Now the ego, the dominant ego, does indeed affect the inner identity and changes it even as it affects and changes the dominant ego. For we are dealing here, after all, with an independent gestalt. The interworkings of the whole gestalt have never been completely understood. For one thing, the self is usually thought of in terms of existence only within one particular time sequence pattern. Its experience, however, is rooted in the past, as you think of the past. Since there is actually only a spacious present, this means that the self is rooted both in past and in the future, using your terms. Until it is studied as a multidimensional gestalt, it simply will not be understood. Reincarnation does not imply a reoccurring time system, nor does it imply an extension of time as it is normally considered. That is, reincarnation does not imply, in a basic manner, existence in one life after another, in your time of successive moments. I admit to you, reincarnation does seem to have such implications. This is simply because you insist upon considering reincarnation in the light of time theories that are themselves incorrect. You must instead consider reincarnation in the light of what you know of the spacious present. Because you are obsessed with the idea of time as past, present, and future, you are forced to think of reincarnations as strung out one before the other, and indeed we speak of past lives simply because you are used to the time sequence concept. What you have, of course, loosely speaking, is something like the developments narrated in The Three Faces of Eve. You have various dominant egos, all part of the same inner identity, dominant in various existences. To make the concept understandable to you, it is convenient to speak of past and future reincarnations. In actuality, you see, these separate existences occur simultaneously. It is only the ego who makes the time distinction. The various existences are not perceivable by you, or rather, they are not perceivable to the ego. In a basic manner, as you know, the past, present, and future exist at once in the spacious present. 145 BC, 145 AD, 1,000 years in your past and 1,000 years in your present all exist now. Therefore, the past existences are present existences. You exist, in other words, in several guises or reincarnations at one time within the spacious present. You simply do not recognize that the so-called past exists now as surely as the so-called future exists now. I suggest you break. Since all events occur at once, there is little to be gained by saying that a past event causes a present event. Past experience does not cause present experience. You are forming both past, present, and future experience simultaneously. Events appear to you, however, in sequence. Therefore, it is difficult to explain many matters to you because they must be given in bits and pieces. When it is said that certain characteristics from a past life influence or cause present patterns of behavior, such statements, and I have made some of them, are grossly simplified simply to make certain points clear. The whole self or identity is aware of the experiences of all the egos, and since one identity forms these egos, there is bound to be some similarities between them and characteristics. The material that I have given you on reincarnation in the past is quite valid, particularly for working purposes, but it is a highly simplified version of what actually occurs. If you take the three faces of Eve, in which actually four egos were involved, and imagine each of those egos taking over, so to speak, in completely separate existences in your past, present, and future, then you may come somewhat closer to the true nature of reincarnation. These four personalities existed, however, in one physical lifetime. Now, to an observer whose time concept was still further segmented and slowed down in comparison to your own, then theoretically within his time system, the four personalities would indeed appear to be four separate existences in fact. In the same manner, you see, several manifestations of one identity appear to you to be stretched out in serial form within a successive time framework. Obviously, however, this analogy only carries us so far. You will say, the four egos belonging to Eve all belonged to some physical body, but in the reincarnational process, we are faced with the issue of several bodies, each one discarded and experiencing physical death. Now I will tell you the nearly unbelievable. There was not one shared body in the case of the four Eves. There were four separate bodies. After the first shock, this should come as no surprise. As you know, the physical body is itself never the same, and the atoms that compose it appear and disappear constantly, while the appearance of permanency is retained. Such a process, and a natural one, took place in the case of Eve. But as the personalities alternated, they took over the organic processes so completely that while the body appeared, generally speaking, to be the same, it was not the same. It should be remembered here that two personalities were allergic to nylon and two were not. Obviously, two personalities made such changes in the physical organism that the allergy was brought on. The organism was physically changed and affected. Even though one personality took over for an hour, still for that hour, the physical organism itself was a different one. It is interesting to note, also, that these personalities did alternate, and all were in existence at once, so to speak, even though only one was dominant at a given time. In the same way, all so-called past personalities are present in your now, but not dominant. Obviously, also, any future reincarnations are present for those who have other lives still to live in your terms. There is simply the simultaneous expression of a prime identity or inner self within the physical system. There are, as you know, other systems. Suggest your break. Narrator notes, at this point the Dr. Instream material was inserted, which I skipped. However, Rob continued after noting, during second break, I had wondered if there was much similarity between the various manifestations of Eve's egos and the relationship between Jane and Seth when Seth was temporarily dominant. I now asked Jane if Seth might not talk about this rather than deal with our interpretations of the envelope data. Jane resumed at a good pace, smoking, her eyes opening often at 10:51. Seth. Now I exist simultaneously with the both of you. This should be obvious, or I would not be speaking with you. Obviously, therefore, I also exist, speaking in your terms, as I am now and as I was. In my terms, you see, I simply exist in the now. There is communication between these various aspects of inner identity that are obviously cooperative. As a rule, I make no attempt to take over the mechanism that Rupert operates in any general manner. He allows me to make some adjustments in it, however, and we shall discuss these in detail before too long. Now, one of the egos, that was mine, you see, is a part of Rupert's whole personality, and we use this as a bridge work. I can use it momentarily. Again, this does not mean that I am a secondary personality. Reincarnation does mean that we are all multiple personalities with an underlying prime identity. I am myself. Rupert is himself. Or if you prefer, Jane is herself. Robin internotes, smile. Seth continues. You forget, you see, that you have also been and are part of this identity, Joseph. In your particular case now, you have branched out to form prime identities of your own, though we were originally part of the same. Now, I am the prime identity that you were part of, and I was myself at one time, so to speak, a part of another prime identity. This development does not always occur for many reasons. Some fragments of an identity simply do not wish to so develop. In the spacious present, you see, we are one, yet entirely individual. Now, we may possibly develop into a newer gestalt, for I cannot see all portions, underline, all portions, Seth says, of the spacious present. There are still veils before my eyes. This is a part of the present I do not perceive. If so, it will be one in which identities are completely retained, and there is no question of a dominancy, but of a smooth working organization. In the time framework within which you now exist, I can help you, but you cannot help me except by allowing me to help you, you see. In the gestalt which could develop, we would be in a position of helping each other more equally. Now, through you, I affect physical reality, and this is indeed one of my purposes. I affect reality, physical reality, because men's minds are changed according to their ideas, and we shall change these ideas for the better. The ideas working through men will affect physical reality for the better. I am here more often than you think, never, however, in a prying manner. Now I am quite willing to continue our session, and so is Rupert. The hour grows late, however, and you had better make a decision on this before I become too involved here. Rob notes. Can you speak for another 10 minutes or so? Seth, I can indeed. The relationship between you and Rupert was necessary before our sessions could begin. Your own illness, immediately before our sessions, was unfortunately necessary in that it made you question the nature of your mental reactions toward physical and psychological events. I helped you then before you knew me. You were quite literally waiting for Rupert, and this is why you did not marry earlier. The connections between you and your development from the same prime identity made your union an excellent one. There is a constant maintenance of identity and a search for stability, psychologically speaking. But then identity, sure of itself, seeks to enlarge its experience, for it is no longer afraid that experience will swallow it. Identity always becomes part of that which it perceives, however, and so it constantly forms new gestalts, while accepting as itself a larger variety of experiences. Therefore, identity grows, and as I have told you, there are no limitations to it. Therefore, we are forming new identities, and you have already accepted as part of yourself experiences which previously would have been considered alien and not accepted. You change because of any experience. You have then changed because of this one. You have become more than you were. I am speaking here to you both. I am not taking you over, so to speak. You are accepting as a part of your whole experience more and more of the reality of what I am. This in no way minimizes me, you see. I make much of my knowledge available to you, but it is still my knowledge, you see. The sharing of it, however, enlarges my own experience. Now then, I will let you rest. You may take a break or end the session as you prefer. Rob notes. Well, it's very interesting, but we have to end it. Seth, my heartiest good wishes to you both. Rob, good night, Seth. And at 11:17, Jane was again well dissociated.